remember that time Bruce Willis used to wear 5 earrings? We do. We saw Hudson Hawk, so you know what that means. Now it's time for How to Disagree. We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Cause you know you wonder how to disagree. Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made? Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Paul Scheer, joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, Jason Mantzoukas. How are you, Jason?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Very good. And Miss June Diane Raphael. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks,
okay,
Paul.
Great. As always, we have a very special guest with us.
That's interesting. Miss June Diane.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's just like her Twitter handle.
MS. You got that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay.
You got
cool.
That right.
Cool. I'm just sussing that out for myself.
We have a very special guest today. You know her from her podcast, The Indoor Kids, all about video games. It's awesome. Please welcome Emily Gordon. Welcome, Emily.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
I like the one hand clap.
I know. It was right there.
And you're
one.
Here.
You gotta clap. You gotta.
Yay!
I'll say this: very few claps ever happen.
We never give
oh,
a clap.
Really?
That's, yeah.
It wasn't like not a. A clap.
You didn't make a conscious choice.
No, that was the most that anyone's got.
Well, then you guys got the clap.
It really was like I you should appreciate that Paul had an involuntary response, which was to applaud your being here, and that June and I looked at him and said, "What are you doing?" No.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they were not going to give it up.
Mm-mm.
We don't want you to get too cocky.
Yeah, I'd be like, "I love LA. How's LA doing tonight? Anybody smoke weed?" And then just see what I can get from that. I love cheap applause.
Guys, let's talk about this movie because. First of all, what the hell is it? Is it a comedy? Is it a mystery? Is it an action movie? A drama? A musical?
I think it's a cartoon that is just with real people in it. That's what
I there's lots
on.
Of like very Looney Tunes, like head bonks.
Oh, yes.
And like yeah. Whenever stuff like punches and stuff, it's sound very effects. Like the sound effects are crazy.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
I couldn't quite tell though if that was a decision made before, like after the movie was shot, because they, like,
or did Bruce Willis so. Write them in? Because he wrote this movie.
And yes,
I think they were already in. Because if you'll remember the scene where, by the way, I have no idea what happens in this movie. I just wrote down words like
yeah.
Mario Brothers, Mayflowers, Da Vinci. Like, I do not know the plot of this movie. But there's one scene where someone punches him and he sort of folds in
yes.
two.
Yeah.
And then he comes back up and then he folds again.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. like the paralysis scene. There's
yeah,
a lot of physical scene. Comedy that
yes.
is very kind of.
So I think that's the tone they were going
I think
for.
So, too.
I agree.
I will say that everything about this movie is like a vanity project gone horribly wrong.
Yes.
Because I don't think anyone was on the same page. I feel like Bruce Willis was doing something and everyone else was doing something too. And we were talking about this before this started. Like, I think everyone was committing 100%.
Oh, yeah.
There was no,
everybody
yeah.
tried really hard.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And everybody I felt like was like, you know what? We're really nailing it. I felt like Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bernhardt.
Oh,
I felt like
of course.
James Coburn. I felt like everybody was like, you know what? We're fucking killing
David
this.
David Caruso killed it so hard.
Oh my God.
David
Caruso was unbelievable.
I can't be like,
and by that, I mean he was horrible.
David Caruso plays a mute named Kit Kat,
of course.
Who is working for the CIA. All the CIA characters have candy bar names. We can get into that later.
or not.
Or not.
Who gives a fuck?
I think that's it. I think that's all you need to hear.
I keep on going.
Not only do they have candy bar names, but they are all eating the candy bars they are named after.
Constantly.
At the auction. Their introduction, before they are named, their introduction is he looks around and notices there are 5 people eating candy bars in an auction where there are also like 5 shakes.
But I thought that that's how they got their names.
No, well, they had other names
no.
before,
no,
and then they
I know
renamed
they had
them.
Other
so
names,
you might be right. Maybe that's because it's
that
their preference
exactly.
of candy.
I like
but then
right.
they oh. still have to eat them?
They don't have to. It's just like that's the candy they like.
Guess dog. What? If you're an undercover CIA agent at an incredibly fancy $100 million auction, guess what you don't do? Pull out store-bought candy and start chomping on it like you're a goddamn asshole.
Lindor truffles. At least have to be Lindor truffles.
Yeah, yeah. Like a Ferrero Rocher.
The
you
guy,
guys
I love that that's the fanciest candy in the world to us.
That and Toblerone, the classy candy.
Absolutely,
oh, Toblerone. Those are the candies that like your parents brought you back from like the duty free shop.
Yes.
When they went on an international
all
trip.
Candy.
And sometimes an Andy's mint.
oh, I love those.
But let me ask you a question about Kit Kat, because Kit Kat's defining CIA trait is that he dresses up as...
Well, he's a mimic, yeah.
A mimic, what? But he's not a good mimic.
He's not only a mimic, but he's an incidental mimic. He just incidentally arrives on the scene wearing exactly what one of the two people in the scene is wearing. Either Bruce Willis, or the one that truly blew my mind is when he was dressed as Andy McDowell.
Yeah.
Yes.
When he shows up, when he escorts her out in Italy in a matching red dress and a wig like hers... How could he have known? So what is this movie?
The CIA is like, are you going to be Andy McDowell at any point?
No. Well, that's the thing. It's he's just a cross-dresser who I think enjoys, like, he's like, oh, this will be fun. I'll dress up like the people who we're working with, but I'm not going to use that to any advantage,
no
tactical
CIA
advantage.
None of it.
Yeah.
The only thing he does to any advantage is say to Bruce Willis via card, because he doesn't speak,
yes.
Watch out for the blue wire.
Right, and by the way, the way he's a mute, so he has to communicate through business cards, but the business cards are so utterly specific.
And they're pre-typed.
Yeah, yes.
You guys, that's the bit. That's the bit.
There's so much in this movie that, like, it's like, there are pieces of this movie that have a Toys-like logic towards
yes.
the movie.
For yes.
Sure.
That is completely unfounded and unwarranted. Like, Toys lived in a fantasy world and everything obeyed that reality.
Like, how when they fall out of the sky, they land on chairs?
Oh, yes, one. Or when they jump off of like a two-story building and land on a marble,
yes.
Marble like slab.
Really hard. It looks really hard.
They're just like totally fine.
But it's juxtaposed with scenes of brutal violence.
Yep.
Yeah.
People getting shot in the
heads
cut off.
Yep.
Like, it's like they didn't they didn't stick that landing. Like, I'm okay
yes.
with a
yeah.
Three Stooges movie, but never in the Three Stooges do you see someone get their heads cut off.
I felt like Bruce Willis was like, let's do Die Hard with Three Stooges plus Bugs Bunny plus Da Vinci plus the Vatican. Andy McDowell's a nun, and I get to sing a song.
It feels like they were writing this movie on set. Like, hey, we'll sing a song now.
Yep.
Put it in new script pages.
Because guess what cat burglars should be doing while they're robbing auction house
is
audibly singing.
Yeah. This is my theory. My theory of the movie is that Bruce Willis has a band called Bruce Willis and the Accelerators.
Oh, I had the album
when
I was a kid.
I mean,
The Return of Bruno.
Yeah, and my theory is that he wanted to make a movie where he could sing and yet not have it be like a quote-unquote fruity musical. And so he was like, I need to make an action movie,
but
maybe
then
put some humor in.
But there's not enough singing.
I agree. I could have used more.
Tell you what, I enjoyed that scene.
The first
like
one?
Swing on a Star.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Swing on a Star, yeah.
Yeah. It actually was quite enjoyable, even though it didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Oh,
yes.
It's not. Oh, heavens no.
But
no,
I did think, here's the thing, and I enjoyed the concept
yes.
that they would time the robbery mm-hmm. because they knew the length of certain songs.
I agree with you on this, but I'm going to just throw one wrench into this. That would require them to sing the entire time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which together.
They don't do.
They stop for harmonies
yep.
or they stop for solos. So if I'm in another side of the museum and I'm just pausing.
You're still counting at that point.
I guess, I
think they're still counting.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're still
regardless,
counting.
Though, it would be one thing if they both put on a little transistor radio headset and listened
yes.
to the song.
Yeah.
But they are singing out loud while cat burgling.
And dancing.
Oh, and dancing. Dancing.
By the way, I'm going to say one thing before I play this clip of them actually singing, because I think you need to hear it. This movie is based on a song.
What?
Yes.
Come again.
Bruce Willis wrote this movie. It was based on a song that him and this guy, I believe Robert Kraft is his name, they wrote a song together called
Crafty?
Hudson.
Yes. Oh, called Hudson Hawk. That's
called
right.
Hudson Hawk. Because
it's the one that plays over the end credits.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
so
horrible.
So basically that song bred this movie.
Oh
now,
my God.
Here's a song. Now, here's them singing. Let's take a listen.
He does have a nice
singing
voice. If you like someone whispering a song.
I do. I do. Okay.
I guess I do too.
And so they do this long musical. They do this long, long sequence. Now, here's my issue with that sequence. It was a kind of, again, I agree. Cool premise
great.
That they know the beats and everything like that. But then Bruce Willis is the sloppiest cat burglar because not only does he rob the safe, but then he leaves everything open mm-hmm. and really unattended.
Very unattended.
Very unattended. Yeah. There's
Which robbery are you talking about?
The first robbery.
Okay,
where,
got it.
The
yep.
first,
yep.
right?
Oh, by the way, they're robbing a place. that they're robbing a gallery that that behind their famous paintings they have a safe.
Yep.
Which
yep.
I thought was a weird touch.
That's like, all paintings are. They just are covers for safe. That's
well,
all
that's
the
only museums. There would be a painting and then like behind
well,
the Mona Lisa.
Most
a great
museums,
safe.
Most museums have upwards of 2,000 safes
yeah,
in the walls.
That's all. And it's just
because
like
it's just behind every painting is a safe.
It's, yeah, it's like a safety deposit box, but it's an arty.
Yeah,
deposit
there may not
box.
Be anything in them.
No,
but
they're always
there.
He is. They are. The action in this movie is so like deeply flawed. like I mean the action, like the heist specifics. Like
yes.
He seems so able to do everything needed in a heist within no time at all.
Yes.
He gets
within
from
seconds.
The basement to the roof, from the roof to the gallery. He opens this. All he has to do is put a lockpick 3 inches from a lock and the door is like open. It's like, it is very bizarre how easy it is to rob the most complex organizations.
He robs the Vatican at one point, spoiler alert, and and with ease. He was in there for roughly 3 to 4 minutes.
And he had roughly an hour of prep. Like, he got to Italy, he woke up in a giant suitcase. Excuse me. He woke up in a giant suitcase.
Stuffed with peanuts.
Having been shipped to Italy. Why? Why did they need to ship him to Italy in a box?
Because he would have fought.
He would have fought the whole way.
But why not just knock him out?
He passed out.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming they put him in cargo.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
they
for sure.
Did.
Yeah, because he was in the peanuts. He was in the packing peanuts.
Guys, what?
There would so many eyebrows would have been raised if they tried to like get him.
A knockout Bruce Willis going through security.
Oh,
You're not gonna get that.
He and Danny Aiello were singing that song. He gets the horse. Then they start singing it just full throated.
Yes.
Well, then they come together.
Like, job well done. Oh, we did this.
They come together and they're laughing
and they're dancing
and they're in. They're still in the auction house.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of the robbery. He decides.
They're not at the end.
No.
They're in the middle.
They have
but are celebrating the fuck.
You have to get out of there. They don't know that.
They knew they had a very short time interval to get out, and they had no problem leaving the safe. Everything about, like, also the whole plan was that this video thing would be on a loop, and at the end of 2 minutes or whatever, it would reveal
itself.
It's
not unlike in Toys.
Yes.
When Robin Williams makes the music video, which is also a very flawed idea.
Is this your go-to reference?
We just watched it recently.
And it's so full of so many amazing moments. June was unfortunately not there.
Wait, you didn't see it, though?
She doesn't feel like she's unfortunate.
Oh, June.
I know.
It's really not good.
But you would think, like, the idea would be, we need to rob this place, and so when the video monitors come back on, everything will be back to normal. But they make a giant mess of that room.
Huge mess.
Yeah, it's...
Well, there's also, like, a complete disregard for time.
Oh.
Okay, so, for example, just in this example alone, Danny Aiello goes, I need 5 minutes. And they go, perfect. Here's the song. Whatever. Bing, bang, boom. Now they all start singing. Bing, bang, ba, doo, boo, boo. Okay? 5 minutes does not. I mean, like, the time is... Danny Aiello fucks up the VCRs.
Yes.
Like, the whatever it is. He's the dubbing of the footage. Hey, you know, he's mistakenly done that. He's made a mess of that. And then later, when the guy sets the bomb to go off in 2 minutes... The bomb goes off in 35 seconds.
35 seconds, 100%.
It's counting down like 2 minutes, you know, 140, one whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then, boom, it explodes.
Well, the bomb logic in this movie is insane. As one person gets a bomb stuck to their head later in the movie, and it's just by a big suction cup.
Like a squeegee,
yeah. And he
is, get that off.
And he could not get that off. Yeah, that would be something that you could get off.
By the way, if you shot that thing at his head with that amount of volume, his head would have exploded instantaneously.
Or just broken his neck. I mean, the force of that 50-pound thing.
Here's the weird
thing. It's a gun
about...
that shoots bombs. If anybody's wondering what we're talking about,
bomb gun.
The bad guys have, one of the sets of bad guys have, we haven't explained this movie at all.
No.
We haven't talked about Da Vinci. We haven't talked about.
You were great at Da Vinci, by the way.
Movie. Yes. How dare you?
A lot of people wrote in that you look exactly like Da Vinci. We'll post a picture on the website so you can see it.
You know what, audience? I do not care for this. You will respect me.
I will. I'm from now on. From now on.
Wait, what? Let me see it.
Here it is. It is an amazing
son
likeness.
Son of a bitch.
Well, by the way, Da Vinci does one of those things in this movie. I'm going to talk about this a couple times, I think. It does these things that are bad movie tropes. And one of the things that always gets me is old characters putting on sunglasses.
Great.
Yeah.
Skateboards.
Skateboards are
which
always
are definitely
welcome.
In there. I wrote down another one in here, too. We'll get to it. But
one of mine was...
Okay, got it.
No, please.
freeze frame, which turns into drawing.
I love
which
it.
Is then a book. Yes. Like, yes. So those are three things that I feel like if you ever see those, you know you are watching. Oh, and sorry. Oh, no, that's in the next movie.
Movie opens in like 1300, whatever, when it opens on that and it just looks like something like the corner of a Spencer Gifts that they somehow, I'm like, oh, I'm on board. I'm ready for a movie.
How about this? How about when Da Vinci enters his lab and cracks his knuckles? He like extends it. He like crack. Like, let's get to work.
And by the way, what was the purpose of that device for Da Vinci?
To make alchemy. Gold. He wants to make gold, yeah.
Alchemy.
By the way, if you guys are guessing, this movie is about alchemy.
But cut to present day. What were they using it for exactly?
Alchemy.
Same thing. They want to turn lead into gold.
Yeah. Wait, the Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bernard?
Yeah.
They wanted to turn lead into gold so that they could world domination.
So they could just control currency.
Yes. That's exactly. It wasn't even, that's what I loved. It wasn't even like, then we'll have a lot of gold. We can sell it.
That's what I couldn't understand.
Yeah, it was like, no.
Then, to control currency and like to start sort of mass chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess so.
I mean, maybe having that much gold would.
First of all, their plan is a terrible plan, and I don't think even anyone knows what their plan is. I will say that Sandra Bernhard and Richard E. Grant, who are the villains in this movie, don't know a lot about gold and lead, or either the scriptwriter didn't either, because there's a scene where they put a piece of gold and a piece of lead in Bruce Willis's hand.
Yeah.
And they go, you need to tell us the difference. They're exactly the same. How would you tell the difference? They're not the same. The gold bar they had would weigh around 30 pounds, and the piece of lead would be about 1 pound.
That's amazing.
That's how strong Bruce Willis is, it doesn't mean anything to him.
Gold is 70% denser than lead, and they also say there's only one molecule of difference between gold and lead. That is also not true. That's 3 protons and 7 neutrons difference. So even the research on this movie is
terrible.
Bare bones, bad. Like, that's easy. You go, the difference between gold and lead.
The scene in the past, the Da Vinci opening scene, where you walk through Da Vinci's lab, and they've got the gold machine spinning.
And Da Vinci's working on everything that he's done simultaneously.
The Mona Lisa is almost done.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Okay, hang on. We all saw that the Mona Lisa's bad teeth were also in that police officer in the present day, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Why?
No, I did not.
I
thought they have a thing about bad teeth. That's funny.
Because like they did it twice within the first 5 minutes.
But never again.
Never again. Anyway, okay, so I wanted to mention that, but they're in the past.
But finally we know why. I mean, that's a funny joke.
Oh, it's
finally
hilarious.
Finally we know why Mona Lisa's not smiling.
I'm assuming Willis was like, hey, we still got those fucking Mona Lisa teeth around? Throw them in this guy's mouth. This is going to be hilarious. In the past, they've got the gold machine spinning, and the thing zaps the whatever, and then they crack open the thing, and everybody's like, ooh, and everybody's speaking Italian. Everybody's speaking non-subtitled Italian, and somebody goes, oh, gold! And I was like, no way that somebody in the fucking 1300s goes, oh, gold! Like, it made me so mad.
Well, the opening scene is just to basically set up the final scene, which is like, oh, and this room has everything that you'll need for our characters to play with, including a flying machine, which comes in very handy.
I was really excited about seeing that scene.
I had forgotten all about it.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I can't wait for this to come in. When he spots it, I was like, money shot.
This is going
to
be it.
Yeah. I saw this movie on a date in high school.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And that was the only part of the movie I remembered, out of the exploding building.
That is amazing.
I remembered hating it.
How did that date go? Like, was the date good?
Not very well. No, actually, the date went totally fine. But it was like, we both were like, fuck this movie.
This is one of my mom's favorite movies.
Yeah, you were saying that.
No.
My mom has great taste in movies and also very bad taste. So she'll watch a lot of like really interesting indie movies. Like, have you seen The Flower of Dr. Nobody? And I'm like, no, I haven't seen that one yet. And she's like,
wait,
it's amazing.
Wait, you haven't seen Flower of Dr. Nobody?
No, not
really
yet.
Beautiful. Oh, dude.
I know. I know it's playing at the whatever. But she also loves this movie and also Saving Silverman, which is a fine movie.
Oh, my
Those
gosh.
Are two of her favorite movies.
Why does she love it?
I cannot get an answer
from her. Does she love Bruce Willis? this.
She loved Moonlighting. We used to watch
Moonlighting. Okay, that's amazing.
I love Moonlighting.
By the way, I was just a sidetrack on a tangent here. Like How I Met Your Mother this week. Again, we have a little rivalry with How I Met Your Mother.
You know what? Fuck those guys.
How I Met Your Mother this week, we're like, they did a rhyming episode, and like, it's never been done before. And I was like, no, Moonlighting did it. They did the iambic pentameter episode.
Yeah, they
did
the Shakespeare, the Taming of the Shrew episode.
Yeah, so I just wanted to break that down.
So guess what, How I Met Your Mother? You guys fucked up again.
The feud continues.
You know the deal. Meet us in the parking lot.
I want to watch this.
H-Y-I-M meets H-D-G, whatever.
I'm just realizing, too, like, when they do that first robbery and they're so casual about it and taking so much time, he hasn't done a heist like this in a decade?
Many years.
Yeah. Oh, at least 10
years.
He's not even played Nintendo. Let's get into the Nintendo. The video game runner of this movie is insane because he's also a young guy. Like, you imagine that Bruce Willis did this movie at like 32, 33?
Yeah.
I mean, it was in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to do the math of that. All right.
Where did, actually, I didn't know this.
Die Hard 2.
Thank you.
So he's still a young man, but he plays up that he's been in jail for such a long
time. Centuries.
Like 10 years on this, and he goes, I don't even know what Nintendo is. And Nintendo comes in, Mario Brothers comes in.
Well, there was a Hudson Hawk video game.
That's exactly what I found out today.
There was a really terrible Hudson Hawk video game, but they pushed it a lot. It was for Nintendo, right?
Yes, yeah. It was for Nintendo.
Yeah,
like, after I loved the movie was out.
Yeah, to go along with the movie, it was going to be this huge thing.
That's why you're here because we knew that.
I only do movies that have video game tie-ins.
Yeah,
it was released for the Commodore 64, Amiga, ZX Spectrum, and Atari, as well as the NES and Game Boy. And it's like, this, by the way, what kid is going like, I love the movie, I want to play the game.
I want to, and what is it, wait, in the game, do you
activate
rob things?
According to,
like, let me rob Vatican.
According here, you play as Hawk and you must steal the Storza and the Codex from the auction house and the Vatican respectively.
Wow.
Then Castle Da Vinci has to be infiltrated in order to steal the mirrored crystal that needs to power the gold machine. On his journey, Hawk must face many oddball adversaries, including dachshunds that try to throw him off the roof of the auction house, janitors, photographers, killer nuns, and a tennis player, presumably Darwin Mayflower.
That is the really weird thing about this movie. Like, none of the theft is done with any grace or intelligence or strategy.
Versus Ocean's Eleven,
where half of
the movie is planning.
Which, by the way, is so
satisfying.
Sexy. Yes.
Yes. Amazing to watch. I love it.
This is like, he wakes up in the suitcase day of, and they give him one tour of the Vatican.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, and you're robbing it tonight.
The papal service.
And there's no trial.
And his list of things he needs are like olive oil, a bunch of stamps. Wait, what did he do with the stamps?
Oh, he mailed himself into the Vatican. Remember, he was in that big box.
Oh, yeah.
By the way,
second time he got mailed.
I love mailing
That's
himself.
That's like his fucking move.
He liked it.
I do want to bring up one of the things, again, why I couldn't figure out how long he's been in jail. He doesn't know what Nintendo is. I buy that.
He hadn't seen E.T.
That's it.
Yeah.
Never saw E.T.
Because E.T. is what, 82?
All right. So E.T. came out in 82. Yes.
Okay. So
that works. Yeah. That works.
Yeah.
In
for
math.
10 years. For a 10-year stint.
Right, yeah. All right. There
but
we go.
But still, I mean, if he's so great at doing this stuff, why didn't he break out of jail? That's number one.
Andy McDowell is a nun.
Oh.
That happens in the... Yeah. She is the romantic lead in the movie. She keeps flirting and going after him.
Oh.
Three quarters of the way through the movie, it is revealed by virtue of a wardrobe change by putting her in a nun's habit that she is a nun.
Are they allowed to dress sexy on their off time?
Well, that means she's an under...
She's also undercover.
She's an undercover nun. She's an undercover. Guys!
Undercover!
Fucking nailed it!
Make the poster! Nundercover.
Nundercover?
By the way, that is a movie.
That is a movie.
Why has this not been done? We have to make Nundercover.
Nundercover.
Oh my God.
By the way, I almost want us to cut this out of the podcast.
I need to register this before
Nundercover. Oh God, I need to leave right now. I have to start writing.
Hey, she'll be in the habit of busting all the crimes.
Oh, that's okay.
I like it.
That's okay.
Okay.
Wow, he really shot you down.
Busting crimes. crimes is her habit.
Oh, I like that.
I mean, you just took my idea and moved it around. I get that.
You know what? You can control the video game. Nundercover the video game.
That'll be a really sexy one.
By the way,
Nundercover. That is amazing.
That's amazing.
Those kind of moments, they don't come along all the time.
Hey, you have to really respect it.
By the way,
I feel great.
I'm not a lawyer.
I feel great.
I'm not a lawyer, but if anyone
writes that. Wait, you're not a lawyer?
I'm not a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
But if anyone writes that, I think we can see you. We have the basis.
Yeah.
If you write that, you're
time stamped.
Yes.
Been time stamped.
Okay. She's a nun.
She's a nun who communicates through a talking light-up
crucifix.
That thing scared the shit out of me. That really frightened
me. That was really weird.
It was uncomfortable to look at.
Well, there's four organizations of secret people in this.
That's what's so confusing. Yeah, I know I did just get a flu shot today, so I watched it. I was a little out of it.
Well,
I was very confused.
I also got the same flu shot, and it did not temper my brain power.
I was very confused about who was CIA.
Well, there's CIA. There's Vatican CIA.
Yeah.
Then there's the other bad guys, but then
Mayflowers.
So I guess that's just three.
The problem it really was that they at various times
were
teaming up and or double crossing
each other. Yeah.
So that was what was confusing to me.
Like Kit Kat was double crossing.
Who?
Kit Kat Caruso?
Mayflowers.
No, Mayflowers killed him.
Wait,
right, because he was...
Danny Aiello was double crossing, but then he wasn't double crossing.
But I thought Kit Kat was...
Kit Kat himself?
These are words we're saying out loud.
I thought Kit Kat was.
They found out that he was double crossing the Mayflowers. The Mayflowers found that out.
No, the Mayflowers just decided kill the CIA team
because
they also shot the Butterfinger.
Snickers.
What am I talking about?
Almond Joy.
Snickers. They killed Snickers. Right. They decided, and then they say, "Why are you killing them?" And she says, "We're greedy," or something to that effect. More like she basically says, "We want it all for ourselves."
Okay.
Don't try to make sense of the plot because I don't think that they even did that service.
Kit Kat, his dying words written on a note were, "I always liked you." Shown to Andy McDowell.
Prepared, so I guess he knew he was.
He knew he was.
And he was dressed as a statue.
Well, here's
dressed as a statue.
That's not the way to go. You don't want to go out dressed as a statue.
What the fuck was that?
I once heard Bruce Willis in an interview say the reason why people like Die Hard is because of the New Jersey comedy.
What?
Yes, he said the reason why people connect to that movie is because they like seeing a guy from New Jersey cracking wise.
This is what happened. This is why we got this movie.
And this is why we got a movie where, literally a guy gets his head cut off, and the line that Bruce Willis says is...
I know it. I guess we won't see him at the hat convention in July.
Yeah, guess we won't see that guy attending the hat convention in July.
Which makes me think there is a real hat convention that takes place.
By the way, it would not surprise me if Bruce Willis was a guy who goes to hat conventions.
But by the way, come on! This is a guy losing his head. There's a million jokes. Yeah. Like, oh, I guess he lost his head.
Also one where he says... How's my driving? 1-800.
Oh, that's the line I was just trying to look for.
That's my favorite scene.
Amazing.
That scene is amazing. He says that line.
Bruce Willis
right after a car pulls up next to him. Bruce Willis.
Yes, this is my favorite line.
Bruce Willis has fallen out of. He's in an ambulance.
Connected by a gurney.
Mm-hmm. On wheels, connected by a bed sheet to the ambulance, going over the bridge.
Maybe the
Verrazano Bridge or like a big New York bridge. Anyway. And he's careening all over the place, and a convertible pulls up next to him, and some pretty girls go, "Hey, mister, are you gonna die?" That's what they say,
and this is crazy.
Like,
it's crazy. This man is bleeding from an ambulance.
You are going to watch someone die. And then he says, the line you just said, "How am I driving? 1-800, I'm gonna die."
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And then
he goes to a toll booth
and pulls that exact change.
The exact change, the cigarette that a woman tosses out of her window and says, "Ugh, menthol?"
Yep.
Yes.
Great joke.
Are you kidding me?
Great joke.
This is my favorite scene in the movie.
And that is my favorite scene. And then there's all these, to me, it's like, all right, I buy that scene because that scene at least felt like it was tonally...
They made a choice.
...appropriate. Yeah. But the rest of the movie doesn't go that way. But then you have these moments where it's like you pass by some security guards, and he's like, "Hey, can you believe it? There's so many Wongs in the phone book."
Oh, my God.
And he goes, "Oh, so many Wong numbers."
And then he goes, look up
chin.
That's it.
These are like jokes that people make at a cigar club, and that's funny, that's funny. and it's like, oh, yeah, well, when they're eating pasta in Italy, they put it in a thermos. Yeah, 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 yeah,
Yeah. Here's a joke that I wasn't clear on what was the point of this. When James Coburn, who's the bad guy CIA agent,
yes,
so he's all mad and he goes, he said something, I can't remember what he says, but then he goes, "We blow up space shuttles for breakfast."
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, man.
I'm going to use that one.
Hey,
actually.
Man, that's
that
not
was,
cool.
That was too soon.
Too soon, bro? Like, what are you talking about? So wait, you guys blew up the space shuttle?
Yeah.
That's true. It's only been, at that point, a couple of years
that's
since
Kristen right
McCullough.
That was in 1986. So that was like only five or six years older.
Guys, too soon.
Way
for this
too
movie.
Soon.
Not cool.
Not cool, guys. Although I do like that line.
It's a good line. I did think that was a bold one. I mentioned in the opening, Bruce Willis does have five earrings.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Like a pirate, which was a very interesting choice. I thought that
he can't get a cup of coffee to save his life.
That is
a real running gag.
All he wants is a cappuccino. So again, making the character super accessible. He's a safe cracker with a heart of gold who only wants a cappuccino, but he gets pulled into an elaborate alchemy plot and things.
Sorry.
Please, go ahead.
Sorry. Please continue. I was looking at my notes and I just saw something.
I want to talk about the relationship between him and Andy McDowell. Two scenes in particular. One, Andy McDowell's genuine, like, amusement at this guy. Like, he flies off of a building, lands in a chair. Again, I buy the Looney Tunes aspect of that. Coughs out feathers. Like, full on, like,
Like he's a clown.
And Andy McDowell sits there, like...
Charmed. And like, they're there for like all of, a guy comes up and he goes, "What do you want?" And he goes, "Sir, I'm the waiter."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Okay, I guess you are." And they order and he wants ketchup for his pasta.
Well, that's the other thing too. There's a thing about like Italian food being bad. Like it's like, "I want ketchup for," like, no, you're in Italy and you're Italian and you're from New Jersey. Like,
this should be wonderful for you.
And you've been in jail for 10 years.
And you want a cappuccino. You have a refined taste. You don't want ketchup. Like,
also ketchup and a cappuccino. You can't want both things.
Yeah, and then cut to Butterfinger, the big doofy guy who's like, "Steak burger, give me a steak."
Okay, the one joke I really laughed at with Butterfingers was when he's in the back of the car. I think they're not speaking out the restaurant, but someplace, and he's saying something, and the guy in front of him goes, "Here, just read a book.
Read your book.
And then he starts reading a children's book.
He starts reading Green Eggs and Ham.
Yeah.
He starts reading Green Eggs and Ham, and they go to yourself. He's like, I felt bad for him.
Yeah, I felt bad for him.
He was a real dummy.
Just for the fans of the show, I think this is interesting to mention that the screenplay was How Did This Get Made? All-Star Mashup. It was written by Steven D'Souza, who wrote Street Fighter.
Amazing.
And Judge Dredd. And also co-written by Daniel Waters, who wrote Demolition Man and Batman Returns.
Oh, my God.
So these guys were...
heavy hitters.
Yeah, really heavy hitters.
Anyone else notice that at the Vatican in the postal subway, there was a cross that had been packaged and was just behind them at one point when Andy McDowell is walking through the subway?
No.
There's a giant, like a crucifix that's just in brown, like, UPS packaging.
So awesome. Weird. Well, how else are you going to move them? I mean,
I guess so.
How else do you move across? So.
I guess now that we know that Andy McDowell is a nun, I can answer this question. But Andy McDowell gives him a shirtless massage. Yeah, and he goes to kiss.
I thought this was post-coital. I thought they had sex,
like,
and
really
they were
confusing.
In bed because he's just shirtless, and she's rubbing his back and asking about his tattoos, blah blah blah, and she is wearing all of her clothes,
every single one.
And I was like, are they done? What is?
And they never go to and, she, and they go to kiss, and she goes, "I can't do this."
Yeah.
Wait. But you can give a guy a shirtless back. I mean, it was very sexual, but now we know why.
What I'm confused about is what exactly her plan was. Like, what was she trying?
She was seducing him.
She already knew what he was going to do.
She wanted to stop him from stealing the codex because they need to protect it.
But did she ever really try to do that?
No.
I mean,
she was trying to get close to him to figure out his plan, but then she realized he was just being used.
He's a nice guy.
Because the Vatican thought he was the threat.
Right, but he was being forced to do this or he'd go back to jail.
Or they'd kill his... Danny Aiello, etc.
It was actually supposed to be Isabella Rossellini in that role,
by the way. Yes, it was.
That was something I read. And Annie McDowell.
Oh.
Yes.
She's like
Italian.
A Southern girl. Like, yeah. Annie McDowell is like not an Italian. She's gorgeous.
She was actually the third choice. It was Isabella Rossellini was originally cast. And then they recast Marusha Detmers, but then she had to leave because she had back problems. And then they brought in Andie MacDowell. Now, I will bring up this one disturbing moment. I don't know if any of you caught it, but the Butterfinger, the big, messy, that guy, goes...
I know exactly what you're talking about.
There's a moment where they're, like, spying on them, and they're trying to come up with what their plan is, and he writes, "Should we rape them?"
He says, okay,
roughly that. Why do we have to do this in movies?
It. He says it out loud.
Early 90s, why do we have to do this?
Can I ask you, this is right when this is when they then say, read your book.
Yes.
It's the same scene.
It's the same scene.
It's the same scene. Now, okay, I really struggled with this because I was like, did he really just say, did he really just say, should I rape her?
Yes.
No, them.
Them. He did say them.
Them.
So that's helpful. That makes me feel better.
That he would. He's he's a monster. He will rape anything. Yes, he will rape anybody.
I'm willing to bet he's saying something else, but that we heard. Is it possible?
Oh, that it got dubbed?
That he's saying like. Yeah.
What else could he have said that that's the better version?
I don't know.
I couldn't make heads or tails out of that. I'll tell you what it was.
It was just a heightening. Like, this guy is a complete animal. Like,
even though he's reading a children's book.
Our next move here strategically might be just me raping them.
Because I mean,
for what purpose? This is a question he asks a lot.
And the way that they kind of put him down is they go, they say to him, like, "No, you can't rape him, just go back to read your book."
Oh, God, I wish you would stop asking if it's time to rape people.
And then there's like
please
one mission.
Please read your book. Please.
There's finally one mission where raping is actually what needs to happen. Oh, and they're like, "We miss you, Butterfinger. Where have you been?
He did the raping on the space shuttle explosion mission. And he's always wanted to get back to that. All right, we have to... Let's get into our villains because Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bullock, Sandra Bernhard.
Really swinging for the fences.
Yeah, let's play a clip of them. You can get a sense of what their performances are like.
This isn't a fantasy. It is a reality.
Oh, yes. If Da Vinci was alive today, he'd be eating microwave sushi naked in the back of a Cadillac with the both of us.
He's a safe on the set.
So that's a little sense of what they are, bombastic, crazy characters playing tennis indoors. That's how you show people are crazy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I don't know exactly what their plan is, but to control the world. World domination. Richard E. Grant did write in his book, With Nails, that this movie was just replotted during the actual days of filming.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes. So, any thoughts on these people?
I enjoyed their performances. I really enjoyed Sandra Bernhard.
Amazing.
So good.
Really, really good. I couldn't take my eyes off of her.
Both of them I thought were terrific. Like, they were just the scenery.
I feel like they were also on tone. Like, they were like, this is what it is.
It's as if in Dan Aykroyd terrible movie...
Nothing but trouble.
The Brazilians were the villains of the movie. That's what it's like. Remember the Brazilians?
Brother and sister.
Like they were those type. Like they were just like incredibly bombastic characters.
Weirdly sexual.
Like really weirdos. And I enjoyed it.
Me too.
I thought that they are the saving grace.
What I didn't enjoy was that dog.
The dog was. I didn't like the dog rooting around and Bruce Willis's crotch. I was like, come on, do we really?
And then the fact that they threw the dog out the window at the end.
Well, the dog was trying to attack Andie MacDowell. What are you going to do?
Yeah, the dog had it coming, to be honest.
The dog was evil. At the end, you could tell the dog, like, wanted... The dog seemed actually more evil than either of its owners.
Well, that's... I was going to say, did anybody else think that the dog was the boss of them?
Yes.
Like, they were just probably doing the dog's bidding.
They're like the son of Sam?
I love that first time you see Sandra
Like he
Bernhard,
was the big evil.
Yeah, he's the big guy. That she's just thinking, I've got the power.
Yes.
That was good.
Sitting on a conference table.
Wait, what was that
a conference table of? Because there was a small Indian boy.
A lot of ethnicities. A lot of ethnicities happening.
Was this the Legion of Doom or something? Like, were they all bad guys?
They were working for a company. Like their company was at M Corporation or whatever.
Yeah, but that's like one one of them was a child. One of the people at that table was a child.
You don't get it, Jason. You don't get the comedy of it. It's funny.
You're right.
That felt like some Temple of Doom stuff. Like, the Maharaja guy. Yeah.
I think you need to hear Bruce Willis explain why you don't get the jokes here. Can you play that clip of Bruce Willis talking about this movie? There's a there's a half an hour interview about Bruce Willis defending this movie on YouTube in three parts. You just Bruce Willis talks Hudson Hawk. You'll find it. Here you go. Here's a clip.
You know, looking at how it kind of became this cult film, and what people, you know, come up and say to me on the street about it is
take your time, Bruce.
They, you know, dig the fact that it was making fun of itself and that it was satire. And I don't think anybody got that when it came out. They thought they didn't know what to make of it. You know, me and Danny Aiello singing in a movie was just unheard of, and they were.
Is that satire? Is that considered satire?
Or something like they were mad that we were trying to make them laugh.
He's Tommy Wiseau-ing this. Rewriting history.
This is riveting.
It's amazing. The interview itself is amazing, but blaming people for not getting satire, but then hearing him to say that satire is Danny Aiello singing is that's not satire. Nope. I don't understand.
He made this earnestly. He didn't make this.
Oh, no.
As
he
like
thought
a,
this was going to be fucking.
Indiana Jones.
He thought this was going to be like.
His James Bond or his man Flint or Austin Powers.
I think he was like, this is going to be Die Hard plus.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be the action and the adventure of Die Hard, but with better jokes.
New Jersey
and
humor.
More like.
Well, some of the jokes, though,
swashbuckle.
Are so slapstick.
Just like, by the way, just if you're wondering what the definition of satire is, I'll tell you that.
Oh, hello.
The use of humor. To ridicule, expose, or criticize people's stupidity of vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics.
I've actually never heard that definition.
So that, I mean, you know, so I don't know if that movie falls into that. The alchemy.
No.
He really took down the alchemy committee. But the movie's original catchphrase was, catch the excitement, catch the adventure, catch the hawk. But when they realized it wasn't really an action movie, they changed it for the home video release, which was, catch the excitement, catch the laughter. Catch the hawk.
That's very telling. That's, they knew. They were like, we got to figure out some other way to package this thing. This is not working out.
Bruce Willis does not, Bruce Willis gets so defensive on this movie when you hear he goes, people criticize this movie. I have so much money. I could just sit by a lake and skip stones. What do I care? That's his response. That's funny to me. His response is like, no, we tried something. He's like, fuck you. I don't need it. I don't need you to like anything. I'm rich.
I did this for me. I didn't even do this for you.
I'm rich as shit.
Which he is. I was looking at his IMDb. That man has been working forever.
Yeah.
He
has so much
money.
So much money.
Yeah.
I do think probably this falls into the category that we are now, like, I hate to say it again, but toysing. I'll bring up toys again. I believe this to be a project that because of his power, box office power, Bruce Willis was able to get this movie made.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, this was a passion project for Bruce Willis. He wrote this movie.
Yeah.
It is built for him.
With
a
budget of $70 million in 1991.
Wow.
It brought in a total of $17 million.
Which is that's some money. It didn't. Oh, I guess it definitely bombed.
I mean, this is one of those movies that is a bomb that you forget about. Like, people talk about Ishtar. But they don't talk about Hudson Hawk. I mean, and I was excited. I remember seeing this and knowing that Bruce Willis is in a movie. I was like, it's going to be great. It's going to be
And it looked awesome.
Yeah.
You know, this was an era when, like, between, like, Die Hard and Indiana Jones, but also, like, a time when, like, Romancing the Stone was a big movie to me.
Yeah, that movie.
And that movie is amazing. Like, a real adventure romance.
Yeah. Oh, it's
and
so
this
fun.
Had that, like, that's why I went to a date. You know, I took a date to this because it looked like it was going to be awesome the way Romancing the Stone was.
Yeah.
And instead, it was worse than Romancing the Stone 2. Jewel of the Nile.
I like Jewel of the Nile.
We haven't even talked about Andy McDowell's Dolphin.
I was just going to say that. The Dolphin sounds were amazing. I remember looking away for a minute and then looking back at the movie and going, wait, what is she doing?
What is she doing? She was doing voices, she was doing shtick. She was like, they double crossed her or whatever. And then she was like, you think I'm a damsel in distress? And then she goes, you know, I can't pay the rent. You must pay the rent. I can't pay the rent. And like started doing like dolphin noise.
Was she trying to intimidate them or?
She was just
them
trying to show them that she wasn't scared of them, I think, was the bit. Like,
she could do bits. No. She
strange.
Was under some sort of drug, right? But the drug was.
That's
too...
what they were saying, that she must still be like coming off of the
paralyzing drug.
Yeah, but that wasn't
That had to be a
side effect of the drug, because Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello had never.
Well, they were being just as silly as they always are. Come on.
They're guys from New Jersey. By the
way, just a couple of pies on.
They also.
By the way, to see Andie MacDowell do that, though, I mean, I always find her to be so
elegant.
Elegant, but also
elegant
very
cardboard.
Bland.
Yeah. Oh, she's bland. She is
just
bland.
Like,
that's
true. There's nothing.
I wrote in this thing so beautiful, so
but
boring,
so boring. To see her do those dolphin noises. I mean, I didn't know what to do.
So you were won over by that performance, the dolphin noises.
I didn't know she had that in her.
Let me ask you a question: Isabella Rossellini, could she have done those dolphin noises?
That's a great question.
She
would have sold it a bit more.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, like, Blue Velvet era Isabella Rossellini.
By the way, I know we already talked about it, but I'm going to say it again. She plays an Italian nun?
Italian nun.
That's crazy. I didn't even really put that all together. There's
but she's American.
No.
She's American.
She's not playing Italian.
She's not. She's American.
But she should be Italian, right?
Yes, she should be Italian. I'm sure if Isabella Rossellini had played it, she would have been Italian.
Yeah, that would have made sense. We want to talk about Frank Stallone, who is part of the Mario Brothers. The Mario Brothers, amazing. Frank Stallone. Give it up for Frank Stallone.
So much more clapping. This is like when they play the old Howard Stern tapes and everybody's clapping for no good reason.
I like a good clap.
They make some subtle digs at Stallone, too. Sly Stallone. Yeah. We have a clip of that. We just play a clip of Frank Stallone. This is a quick one here.
There's a safe on the 7th floor. You take their thingy and you put it in this thingy.
Directions even your brother could understand.
Oh, shots
slammed.
Fired.
Little did he know that they'd be opening a Planet Hollywood just months later.
He's talking about the brother that's sitting right next to him.
But we all know what he's doing. By the way, the beginning of the movie, like, he's going to drink a cappuccino, and a guy pulls out a gun in the middle of a crowded restaurant, shoots the cappuccino glass. No one moves.
No one moves.
And he's out there with a gun. Not hidden.
The gun has a silencer.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, but like it's a crowded bar and nobody flinches. Nobody seems to notice.
And then Danny Aiello hits a guy on the head with a wine bottle a few minutes later, shatters, and two people look over.
Yeah.
This is where this
movie. That's a weird bar.
Fuck this movie.
Obviously, we had an opinion about this movie, but there are certain people who have a better opinion. Now it's time for 5-star reviews from Amazon. Oh, 5-star reviews. You guys can comment on these as you see fit. Here we go. This is titled "For a True Movie Fan." I've probably watched this movie round 100 times, and I can practically
round
quote it.
100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an apostrophe before round?
Yes.
Okay.
I think my mom wrote this review
around 100 times and can practically quote it from start to finish. I certainly wouldn't have done that if this movie was bad.
Oh my god.
5 stars.
Oh my god.
So basically,
I do agree with you, Jason, though. Like, the apostrophe.
What's the point?
It's one letter.
You've already done it.
Taking the place of that apostrophe. Yeah.
There is the same number of characters in that word.
Yeah.
Yes. Here's another one. Boom.
And the colloquialism of it, the casualness of it it doesn't matter. That word doesn't matter. And I know I'm sure I used colloquialism wrong, so everybody shut the fuck up.
Everybody relax. You're going to get
you. Stop saying I look like Da Vinci.
This one is titled Boom, Side by Side, Boom. You'll be rolling on the floor laughing, but be careful and not die laughing too hard.
Okay.
What?
Did Danny Aiello write that? That's
5-star review.
I have had some experiences with side-by-sides. I just want to say that.
Bruce is a riot.
I'm worried about it.
This is what I get. This is a lot of the Hudson Hawk reviews attack critics for being bad. So this one goes, I think movie reviewers underappreciate a good comedy. Most are stuffy, overweight, undereducated film study dorks.
Uh-oh.
I agree with the
first sentence of that for sure. Yeah, they don't appreciate comedies.
They don't appreciate comedies.
Yeah.
Who are these critics? Who cares? These are the same critics that think that Gandhi is one of the best things to happen to film, which just goes to show you what they know. This movie's about fun and entertainment, and not meant to be scrutinized, analyzed, or otherwise-ized. Watch and enjoy. 5 stars.
Oh, I love that guy.
And this is my favorite review of all time, by Yellow Defender. I thought the storyline was great. It was a little boring, but it kept me on my toes. My favorite parts were when the dog, Bunny, goes flying out the window, and when Bruce gets out of jail and throws the key into the mop thing, and he adjusts his hat. He had me in. He had me try cappuccino too, and it's pretty good. I think this is one of Bruce's best movies, even if he doesn't think so.
So he turned him on to cappuccinos. That's
huge.
Wait, one of his favorite parts was the hat?
When he adjusts that, this is like also like again another like non-joke joke. Like Bruce Willis like steals a guy's keys and then tosses his keys in a dirty mop bucket and he's like, hey.
Yeah,
just like adjusts
cool
the hat.
Guy.
It's like it's a like, cool guy.
It's a non-moment.
It's a non-moment moment, but it's like but it's also like he's so cool. Hudson Hawk
that's
is so
what
cool.
That's what I think this guy was responding to. Like he does it to his hat, he drinks cappuccinos, like
he throws
this is
dogs
a cool
out of a window.
Guy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's like the. I think it's He definitely appeals to like the I want to hang out and have a beer with that guy. You know,
which he does that in his other movies that are better. Also,
oh yeah,
yes.
This movie is terrible. He's great in a million movies.
Die Hard? Are you kidding me?
We think that Danny Aiello has died in this movie, only to realize that he is come back. And we want to just play the Danny Aiello's comeback moment. Here we go.
No way! Yes way! Did I miss anything?
Did you miss anything? You're supposed to be all crashed up at the bottom of the hill.
Airbags, can you fucking believe it?
You're supposed to be blown up into fiery chunks of flesh.
Sprinkler system set up in the back. Can you fucking believe it? Yeah, that's probably what happened.
Drink your cappuccino.
Hey, drink your coffee.
He gets his cappuccino.
Oh, thank God.
And a moment before he gets his girl to play Nintendo with him, she agrees to play Nintendo with him.
They play the Hudson Hawk game. Danny Aiello pulls up to that scene riding a donkey.
Yeah. Yes.
I just want to say he is on the he is just riding the donkey into town. Because they have also just flown in Da Vinci's original flying machine.
Which still works and was not updated at all.
What?
Yeah. It's amazing. I love that scene of them, the two of them, like, just having a blast. I like to think of that day of filming that they were like, all right, just get on my back. We're going to go ahead and...
It did look like fun.
But that's the one thing. I do feel like the two
it
of them were
like fun.
But there's a scene in the movie where they just both grab their balls when they hear an explosion. Like, oh!
Yeah.
Like, it's like, they. I feel like they're like, yeah, we'll do this, and this is good.
Little
it's like,
moments, yeah.
Or how about like when they're hanging off the side of a castle. They've somehow... He and Danny Aiello have scaled a castle. They are hanging off the edge. They're luring the guards to come so they can punch them out. And Bruce Willis goes, hey, how do I look? And he goes, what are we going to do that right now? With this right now? No, I just want to know. How do I look? What are you talking about? We're hanging off the edge of a castle here. What are you asking me? How do I look? And then the guards come up and they're like, punch, punch. You look pretty good. You look pretty good. That's the kind of bullshit this movie is full of.
It's like if the guys who hung around Tony Soprano wrote a movie.
This
that
is Christopher's movie.
Yeah, right.
This is Christopher. If you told me Christopher Moltisanti wrote this movie, I would be like, okay, I get it, and it's not that bad.
Then also they make a lot about the one thing I want to say just before we wrap up too, and if you have any final points, but they make a big deal about Danny Aiello being fat.
I was about to say that too.
He's not that fat.
Yeah.
Both like in there.
Neither. Well, here's the thing. Bruce Willis, his figure is also. Not the slender figure of like a thief or a cat burglar. Like
that's
he's
true.
He's slinky. Not graceful or
just for the listeners. June is doing cat-like motions with her hands,
like a cat, like rare. I'm gonna rob you, meow.
Guess what? You consider yourself robbed.
You'd be June, a great cat burglar.
Would you like to be in undercover as a cat burglar that robs?
So
you know what? You know what? I'm gonna need to see you in the habit.
For now,
I'm gonna need to see you in the habit.
No, no, no. She's the burglar. She's the enemy.
Oh, no, but the nun has to go undercover.
As a cat burglar.
Yeah. There's a lot like of double
undercover.
Like this.
Or is it a cat burglar that goes undercover as a nun? Guys,
this is amazing.
I want to assure everybody, this will be
That's
not even remotely similar to Sister Act.
Not even a
Not
please.
Even remotely similar.
It'll have moments
in
of
at all.
It'll have moments of miscongeniality, I think, in thematic.
Possibly.
Maybe the second one. Sister Act.
Sister Act is she witnesses a murder and has to go hide out in a convent.
She's a soul singer.
Will it be anything like
right,
nuns?
But that is all about
and
like,
then
getting
she,
the convent to sing. And
yes,
all
exactly.
That
exactly.
Will this it be anything totally like Nuns different. On the Run?
No, it won't be like Nuns
Ooh,
on the
who's
Run.
Who's Nuns on the Run?
Irish guy and somebody else.
Irish guy,
okay,
Irish
good,
guy,
good.
And the other one.
Oh, yes, that one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Irish guy and the other one.
Yeah, Eric Idle and Robbie Coltrane.
That's right.
What? Any final thoughts? Anybody have any final thoughts? Would you
go see it? Five stars.
Yeah, five. Would you guys see it? Would you? I would recommend you should watch it. Oh, maybe
it's a fun party movie. What? I think it's a fun party movie. If you
it's crazy enough. There's a crazy enough moments in
there's
it.
Watch it, be willing to fast forward.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, because you know who cares.
It is.
But
definitely
watch all the Richard E. Grant, Sandra Bernhard stuff.
Oh my gosh,
that shit's awesome.
And I will say, I watched most of it, but the 3-part interview series with Bruce Willis and Robert Kraft as they sit around. And Bruce Willis just goes into getting very defensive about the movie, and explaining the movie, and talking about the song. They play the song. They sing the song.
Ugh.
It's a 3-part thing on YouTube. Bruce Willis talks Hudson Hawk. I think you will enjoy it.
I think I won't.
I think you will love it. All right. So just once again, Emily, your podcast is on the Nerdist channel.
Yes.
They can get it. The Indoor Kids. It's you and Kamal.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. I've done it. It's great. You should do the Hudson Hawk game maybe. We should do a
crossover. Oh, that's actually a good idea.
That would be fun.
I got to track it down.
Have you guys ever
done
movie to video game? Like,
we have. We have done, and actually that one didn't come up in the episode that we did, but we did a lot of like the Godzilla games that have come out, the E.T. one.
That
obviously.
New Godzilla trailer is fucking awesome.
Oh, that's amazing.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm
it's
pretty excited.
It's fucking awesome.
I'm saving it.
Cool. It's just like Oppenheimer talking about like the...
it's really neat.
Yeah, yes.
All right, cool.
If you are looking at pictures of me from this podcast, you'll notice I have a mustache. It's because I just came from the Arsenio Hall show where I just played Arshirio Paul. That happened already, but I'm sure you can find me as Arshirio Paul on Arsenio Hall's website or anywhere else, so definitely check that out. You can follow me at Paul Shear on Twitter. Oh, and what are you?
I'm at The Gynamite.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I'm at Miss MS June Diane.
Jason, just checking in on your Twitter.
Yeah. No, not on Twitter, guys.
Okay, great.
Still not on Twitter.
On Twitter.
You know what? It's good. You probably have more time to do stuff in your day.
So much time. Yeah. So much jerking off.
Just
undercover.
I got to write an undercover now.
Thank God
I'm not on Twitter.
Undercover.
Thank God I'm not on Twitter because now I have time to write an undercover. So I do actually want to plug my upcoming film project, Undercover. Because by the time this airs, I suspect I will have already sold it.
Absolutely.
Oh, maybe look on Kickstarter. Maybe I should Kickstarter an undercover.
I would get behind it. I would tweet that link out.
And you should get the Twitter account for an undercover. I'm sure nobody's.
Yeah, get this. By the website,
I gotta get it before.
Go
this,
to Squarespace.
Before this comes out,
set up your website.
I gotta do all this before this episode drops. Shit.
You got some time. Just a reminder: we're gonna be doing this show live in LA at Largo on December 13th. 2 episodes back to back. First show sold out. Second show still available. 2 different movies, 2 different guests, both holiday movies. And on December 12th, I'll be doing my Christmas show there with Rhett Miller. All the money goes to charity. Great people like Casey Wilson, Adam Pally are going to be doing that with me. Rhett Miller, you remember him from Cobra. So go to largola.com, pick out tickets for that. And also a big thanks to everyone who helps us out here at the show. Our lead engineer, Frank Capella. Thank you so much, Frank. You're always amazing. And our clip puller, who's always suggesting great stuff, Avril Halley. And Nate Kiley, who's doing all of our research. He's amazing. And the fantastic Katie Dyer, who does our Twitter account. You can follow us on Twitter always at HDTGM. She also does our Facebook page. Leanna Waldron does all of our cool art. Check us out in the Earwolf store. We got cups. We got new shirts. Do it. Guys, we did it. Hudson Hawk. We caught the adventure. We caught the hawk.
We caught the laughter for sure.
Thank you so much for joining us, Emily. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio Boom.com. The wolf's dead.
Hey, I'm Arnie Niekamp, host of the Earwolf podcast, Hello from the Magic Tavern, a fully improvised comedy chat show set in a magical world. I'm from Chicago, but my co-hosts are a talking badger.
Oh, yeah, baby. Well, I'm actually a shapeshifter.
Yeah, it's complicated. I'm also joined by a talking wizard.
All wizards can talk, but I am the greatest talker of them all.
I'm trapped in a magical land, and instead of having adventures, every week we interview monsters and talking animals. Some of the great guests we've had on the show include Lauren Lapkus.
Paul F. Tompkins.
Travis McElroy,
Tawny Newsome, Felicia Day,
Sean and Hayes from Hollywood Handbook,
Zach and Jess from Off Book,
Scott Adsit, Janet Varney,
Matt Besser, Danielle Schneider, Todd Barry,
Gilbert Gottfried, all these guests, and many, many more.
You can start from the first episode if you want to follow the whole journey.
You can jump in if you scroll through and you see a character that sounds interesting.
Or just listen to the most recent episode.
That's Hello from the Magic Tavern. Listen to it on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.